Okay, so this is the final session of a several part series, kind of spread out over a period of time. And those of you that were with us in the first part, you know the topic. It's Vyasa's realization during the trance that he entered according to the instruction of his spiritual master, Narada Muni. And the importance of this section is as follows. This is just review. Review for the people that were here for the earlier session and new for you that weren't. Jiva Goswami, one of our stalwart superlative acharyas in disciplic succession, disciple of Rupa Goswami, nephew of Rupa and Sanatan Goswami, and he who successfully continued after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's departure and after the departure of Rupa and Sanatan Goswami, continued successfully, very effectively. The line of disciplic succession is described that the very day that Rupa Goswami departed from this world, of course, a grand ceremony in honor of his departure, as he was placed in his samadhi. Many of you have seen that place, at least have seen pictures of the place. His samadhi is at the Radha Damodar temple, because his bhajan kutir is also at the Radha Damodar temple, as are the deities of Jiva Goswami in the residing place of Jiva Goswami. So the very day, they didn't wait, the very day that Rupa Goswami's samadhi memorial was completed, Jiva Goswami was anointed as the successor acharya by Raghunath Bhatta and Gopal Bhatta Goswami. Of course, contemporary of that time was also Raghunath Das Goswami, but amongst them, of the remaining four Goswamis, Sanatan had already departed, Rupa Goswami departed, Jiva Goswami was very clearly the successor acharya. Everyone was, as Prabhupada called it, self-effulgent acharya. And such wonderful work he did to maintain the sampradaya. Among other things, we discussed the first day of this series. In a comprehensive, two important words, comprehensive and systematic presentation of Lord Chaitanya's teachings. Because the other Goswamis, they also wrote voluminous literature, but on something or something or something. For example, the Bhagavat Sandarbha, the topic of one of Jiva Goswami's six Sandarbhas, Bhagavat Sandarbha, is very, very similar in subject matter to Rupa Goswami's Laghu Bhagavatamrita, without going into detail, describing Bhagavan, the position of Bhagavan. And yet another Sandarbha, Krishna Sandarbha, of the aspects or features of Bhagavan, Krishna's superlative. Whole Sandarbha for that one. I mean, comprehensive and systematic. And the first of those six Sandarbhas is called Tattva Sandarbha. Tattva means truth or reality or something like that. Like Jiva Tattva, Vishnu Tattva, Shiva Tattva. So Tattva. Tattva means category or reality of the category of truth. So Tattvasandarbha establishes in the first section that Srimad Bhagavatam is the foremost of all authorities. And systematically and comprehensively he goes about that. The next overall strategy of Jiva Goswami was to summarize Srimad Bhagavatam's message and to indicate that Srimad Bhagavatam's message is the message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Not the other way around. Not that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's message was the message of Srimad Bhagavatam. You can say it either way, but his logic was Srimad Bhagavatam is the message of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, without belaboring the topic too much, there are different sections of Srimad Bhagavatam that are essences of the entire Srimad Bhagavatam. One of them you may be familiar with. There are four verses in the second canto that are considered the Chatur Shloki verses. We're going to touch on that today. Chatur means four. Shloki means four, the four essential verses that summarize the entire Srimad Bhagavatam. So, Jiva Goswami touches on those, in his sandarbhas. In this sandarbha, in fact, in the second half of Tattvasandarbha. But he spends a lot of time discussing some other verses, but these verses are the verses where Vyasadeva, under Narada's instruction, entered into a state of trance and had full realization of Krishna. So full realization of Krishna means knowledge about the relationship of all things with him. Some of you are familiar with this term, sambandha, gyan. Knowledge of the relationship of all things from their source of emanation, Krishna, sambandha. Then this verse number 6 is abhideya. Abhideya means acting in that relationship, devotional service. And the third is, what's the fruit of acting in that relationship of devotional service? Prayojana. That's the last two verses that we're going to discuss. 8 and 9. 7, 8, and 9, excuse me. Shall you say it again? Sambandha, abhideya, prayojana. Verses 4 and 5 are discussing the relationship of all things with their source of emanation, Krishna, sambandha. Acting in that relationship, this is this verse, number 6. Devotional service is acting in that relationship based on knowledge of the relationship, acting within the relationship, and then the fruit or prayojana. As that acting in relationship with Krishna matures, what does it look like? That's what prayojana is. Jiva Goswami is selecting those verses because these verses are the basis as he was instructed by Narada. From these verses, write one literature. So he did. Excuse me. On the basis of your realization, which these verses explain, write one literature that just does one thing. What's that one thing? Only about the absolute truth and the means to achieve the absolute truth. None of the fruitive activities or mental speculation program. Leave that out. Just this one thing. So these verses hold the essence of Srimad Bhagavatam, and therefore it's in Srimad Bhagavatam presents the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. Maybe some of you are familiar. You've heard or you've read about Lord Chaitanya's discussion with Prakashananda Saraswati. He was a sannyasi, a Mayavadi sannyasi. You've heard of Mayavadis. So he was not only a Mayavadi sannyasi, but he was a big one. He had thousands of followers. He was a big guy amongst the Mayavadis. And Lord Chaitanya and Prakashananda Saraswati had a little discussion being that was heard by his thousands of disciples. I don't know if they had a loudspeaker system or how they did it so that they could all hear. But they discussed Vedanta Sutra. Vedanta Sutra. And keeping it short because of time, Lord Chaitanya explained Vedanta Sutra is very simple to understand. It has three parts, Sambandha, Videya, Prayojana. So Vedanta Sutra is divided into four sections. The first two are Sambandha, the third one is Abhideya, and the fourth one is Prayojana. Guess what? Srimad Bhagavatam explains them. And guess what? It's all embedded within these little verses. So we're just doing like a zoom in on these verses because Jiva Goswami is taking us on a guided tour through what the message is, the particular language, and what the language means, and so forth. So that's what we did before this evening, and now this evening we're just doing the last 7, 8, 9. So we're going to do a really quick review of 4, 5, and 6. So Canto 1, Chapter 7. The first verses of before number 4 comes 1, 2, and 3. In those first three verses, it begins by saying Narada had left. Vyas did what Narada has said. He was his disciple. So Vyasadeva went to the sacred river, took his bath, touched water for purification, sat down on the bank of the sacred river, and fixed his mind in complete absorption, in trance, samadhi, upon the personality of Godhead. And if you can remember the verses well enough as I recite them, we're going to just recite the first two verses, and then we can read together verse number 6. If you know the verse, you can say it with me. Text number 4. Bhakti yogena manasi samyak pranihate male apashyat purusham purnam mayam cha tad apashayam. So, the first two lines, bhakti yogena manasi samyak pranihate male, says what Vyasadeva did. He fixed his mind samyak completely, in trance, in devotion, bhakti, yogena, manasi, samyak. Samyak means complete. Pranihate, perfectly engaged and fixed his mind upon. Amale means without contamination, pure. Pure devotional trance. That's the first two lines. And then here was his realization. Apashyat means he saw, pashyati, apashyat purusham purnam. Purusham purnam means the Supreme Person. And we discussed, Jiva Goswami explains, this means he saw Krishna. Not Super Soul or Lord Vishnu or any other form. He saw Krishna, and when you see Krishna complete, there's Radharani. If you remember, he gave the example of, if you say, I saw the full moon. So, there wasn't a full moon last night, but I saw the full moon last night. Means, it implies you saw the halo of the moon. You can't see a full moon without seeing the halo of the, it's implied. You don't have to say, and by the way, I also saw the halo of the moon. So similarly, Jiva Goswami says, Apashat Purusham Purna means he saw the whole spiritual world. Radha, Krishna, the whole abode, Goloka Vrindavan, he saw the whole thing. The cows and the peacocks and the trees and the river Jamuna and Govardhan Hill. He saw everything. Because the Lord and his abode are none different. So he saw everything. Pashat Purusham Purnam. And then he also saw the external energy. Mayam Cha. He saw the feature of the illusory energy. The internal potency, the external potency, the Supreme Person and all of his loving associates in the spiritual world. That Maya was Mayam Cha. Tad apashrayam. Ashraya means shelter. It was under his shelter. Specifically, it's translated and explained by our acharyas. Under his full control, standing behind the Lord, because he had Maya get out of the way so Vyas can see. So he saw. Maya was there. So that's verse 4 in a really simple rendering. Then text number 5. Yaya samohito jiva atmanam trigunatmakam paropi manute artam tatpritam chabi padyate. So there's another missing element, that's the living entity. So there's God, there's external potency, internal potency, and the living entity. And he saw how that Maya is sammohito jiva, is bewildering the living entity. Yaya sammohito jiva atmanam trigunatmakam. Although the living entity is soul, is spirit, unfortunately the bewildered state the living entity thinks they're not spirit. Instead, they think they're a product of the three modes of nature, this body, under the influence of Maya. We think like that. Yaya samohito jiva atmanam trigunatmakam. Paropi. Para means transcendental, like para prakriti, spiritual potency. Paropi, although para, paropi manyate anartam. We know that anarta is. We are very familiar with anartas. Anartas are undesirable. There's artha and anartha. Undesirable contaminations of heart. Paropi manute anartam. Tat kritam. Krit means to do or the reactions to what you do. So, bound by the reactions of fruitive activity, the living entity is bewildered and captured. Abhipadyate, one undergoes that bewilderment. So that's the Sambandha section, very quickly. And we also discussed this one, the Abhideya section. Let's chant it together. Anartha pashamam sakshad bhakti yogam adhoksuje lokasya janato vidvans chakre satvata samhita. Translation is, the material miseries of the living entity, which are superfluous to him, can be directly mitigated by the linking process of devotional service, bhakti yoga. But the mass of people do not know this. And therefore the learned Vyasadeva compiled this Vedic literature, which is in relation to the supreme truth. Satvata Samhita. Satvata Samhita. Because it's the best of the scriptures, because it's in relation to the supreme truth. So lokasya janato vidvangs. Vid means to know. People in general don't know. They're under the influence of Maya, so they don't know what their situation is. They don't know the linking process. They don't know the supreme. I mean, they may have some faint, foggy idea, but really don't have a clear idea. And being compassionate, Vyasadeva compiled to give them this bhakti process. So that's the Abhideya. And this is a little summary of what Jiva Goswami writes. He's describing the sadhana aspect, the practicing aspect of devotional service, where anartha upasamam sakshat, the eradication of anarthas, is being presented. And he specifically says this is describing the sadhana bhakti process. Why? Rather than the bhakti process, because for the sadhana stage, one needs instructions. So Vyasa is giving instructions for people who need instructions. It's not describing the prema bhakti stage because one doesn't require that. At least, you know, how to engage in eradication of anarthas. Pure devotees don't require that. They still have someone guiding them in spiritual life. Prabhupada explains that's always the case. Even in the spiritual world, the gopis have their senior gopi that they receive guidance from, but doesn't require instructions in the practice of bhakti. And very important point for those of us that are sadhakas, when sadhana bhakti matures, it becomes prema bhakti. And here's his explanation with different scriptural references, which I don't need to repeat, but from Krishna's instructions to Uddhava, 11th canto, chapter 20, that loving devotional service is achieved through sadhana bhakti. Prema bhakti manifests from sadhana bhakti. And he gives another reading that sadhana bhakti cures the contaminations of material suffering. Whereas in the stage of prema bhakti, or pure love of God, even more so, the tendency, the capacity, the susceptibility to bewilderment, and, you know, our dear friend false ego, that's also gone in the prema bhakti stage. So now we're moving along to the final section. Let us chant together. Yasyam vai shruyamanayam krishne parama purushe bhaktir utpadyate pungsa shoka moha bhayapaha. I'll translate. Simply by giving oral reception to this Vedic literature. Simply by giving oral reception to this Vedic literature. The feeling for loving devotional service to Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, sprouts up at once to extinguish the fire of lamentation, illusion, and fearfulness. Those of you that are familiar with Rupa Goswami's teachings, let's say Nectar Devotion, let's say Chapter 1 of Nectar Devotion. What's the title of Chapter 1, Nectar Devotion? Characteristics of Pure Devotional Service. There's six. And of the six, the first two are described here, or at least one of the two, Kleshagni, the eradication of miseries. Just by the process of sadhana bhakti, eradication of miseries, according to this verse, sprouts up at once. You know, at least like a flame to engulf, the fuel of our material karmas and miseries and sufferings and fear and lament and all that stuff that we're too familiar with. when properly processed, practiced, just this one thing, what we're doing right now, giving oral reception to Bhagavatam. This is a Bhagavatam verse. Because Krishna is the Parama Purusha. We already heard that word, Parama Purusha. It was in verse 4. He saw the Supreme Person and he understood. This is Vyasadeva's realization, the mitigating process. It's still in the Abhideya stage, in the sadhana bhakti stage. Bhaktir upadyate pungsa shoka. Shoka means lamenting. Moha, bewilderment. Bhaya, fear. Apaha, is destroyed or extinguished. So now, this is text 47 from Tattva Sandarbha, where now I'm going to provide you with Jiva Goswami's commentary. Now, Jiva Goswami wrote the book, and he also wrote a commentary on his book. And this is taken from his commentary, and then Baladev Vidyabhusan wrote a commentary on his commentary. And so, this is drawing from both of them. And Jiva Goswami explains, this is now the third prayojana, the effects. Here's what he writes, or the translation of his commentary. Next, to clarify the final goal, prayojana, as described above in verses 4 through 6, because this is now 7, and to affirm that the Purna Purusha is, in fact, Krishna, Shuka Dev Goswami speaks this verse, beginning this 77. There's the Yasyam. Whoops. And that's also supposed to read Yasyam, it does. While describing the effects of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam in this verse, Sutta reveals another of Srila Vyasadeva's realizations. What's that? In this verse, the word bhakti refers to pure love of Godhead. Why is that? Because that is the goal achieved through executing the devotional practice of hearing. The word utpadyate, I made it in really big letters. Utpadyate, literally it means is generated. Here it means becomes manifest. What is that? The seed of bhakti is already within, and hearing and chanting makes the mature stage manifest. Yes? By the process, the mature stage manifests. Padyate. And the manifestation of pure love of Godhead is shoka, moha, baya, paha, which is lamentation, illusion, and fear destroyed. The implication being that even their subtle remnants are destroyed. So now, you who are a little more familiar with Bhagavad Gita, where in Bhagavad Gita does Krishna teach the same thing? It's one of the Chatur Sloki verses of Bhagavad Gita. I'll narrow it down a bunch. Which one? Yes. Jnana Dipena Bhasvata. So could you explain it? Do you have the little portable microphone up there? Can you do your best to just summarize with that, how this is explained by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita? How Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita is the same as this. Either way you like.
Krishna says that...
Shishi Kishore Kishore Ki... Krishna says
that he destroys ignorance from the heart of his devotee, just as a shining lamp dispels darkness. So when this love of God manifests, as it's mentioned here, then the darkness that is the cause of the lamentation, religion, and fear are destroyed.
Yeah. Did you get that? What's the root cause of suffering? Ignorance. What's the root cause of suffering? Ignorance. So these things, lamentation, illusion, and fear, those are suffering features, and the root cause of them is ignorance. So ignorance is destroyed by knowledge. So the lamp of knowledge, jnana dipena bhasvata, is the illumination that comes from that lamp of knowledge. It destroys the darkness of ignorance and all the suffering that goes with the darkness of ignorance. Here's a little bit more elaboration on that. Arjuna has a doubt. Good one. Supposing all of these wonderful things that you said in the previous verses about Sambandha and Abhideya are true, and when one engages in this process, one derives great happiness and satisfaction discussing Krishna Katha like this. But what about the fact that we've been engaged in material existence for since time immemorial? There's a residual tendency to go back and do it again. Material activity. You know, whether you bloop and go and do it or just kind of hang out and pretend on the side and do it. Just, you know, illusion or nonsense or deviation from the happiness of Krishna program. What about that tendency? It's something like, an example is given, supposing there's some really rotten something or other. You go and clean up the, you know, the rotten mess of that something or other. And you go back and it's, you even like do the disinfectant and it's all clean. There's still a bad smell in the air. Somebody vomits. You clean it up. It still smells bad. You get the idea. So what about that bad smell? That tendency to do it again. Lingering residual tendency. What about that? That's Arjuna's doubt, and Krishna's answer is he take care of that. The residual tendency till there's nothing left. Even subtle remnants of such tendency are eradicated by Krishna. And to support this, Jiva Goswami adds that Rishabhdev in his teachings from the fifth canto Bhagavatam says the same to his sons. These are first verses of chapter 5, canto 5, are really nice verses. And Rishabhdev says, therefore, until one has love for Lord Vasudev, who is none other than myself, he is certainly not delivered from having to accept a material body again and again. Lingering tendency will remain until one has come to that love of God stage. So we must come to that love of God stage. And there's a means. The previous verse has described it. The hearing of the messages of the Srimad Bhagavatam, specifically. So this is text 47. And one other comment on this text number 7, 177, is that Parama Purushe means the form of Krishna. It's the same as the Purna Purusha mentioned in verse 4. Which form is being spoken about? Krishna. To this, Śrūta Goswami replies, Krishna, in other words, for those whose hearts are enriched with thousands of scriptural statements such as Krishna's to Bhagavan Swayam, etc. And for those who are attracted to his glories and fame by hearing through a bona fide disciplic succession, as soon as they hear his name, their minds are filled with his presence. Is that what happens when you chant japa every morning? Well, that says we're not at the pure stage yet, love of God stage. But that's what happens in the love of God stage. As soon as such persons chant the first syllable of his name while uttering his mantra, from Krishna's side, the Lord's attention is also drawn to such a chanter. That is the form denoted by the word Krishna in this verse, 177. We'll go back to what 177 says. Yasyam vai shruyamanayam Krishne paramapurushe. So he's being very specific here. He's giving the prayojana, the standard of love of God, so that we know what the goal is, what that standard is. This is confirmed by the author of Nama Kamudi, translating the conventional meaning of the name of Krishna. Meanings, he gives three. One who is black like a tamal tree, or he who was breastfed by Mother Yashoda, and the Supreme Brahman. Now, the Supreme Brahman doesn't mean the impersonal Brahman. It's the basis of the impersonal Brahman, just as Krishna says in chapter 14, Bhagavad Gita. He is the pratishtha of Brahman, so he's the Supreme Brahman. Okay, so that's 177. Now, here comes 178. Whoops. Let us chant together. Sa samahitam bhagavatim kritvanu kramya chatmajam sukham apayapam asha nivritti niratam muni. The great sage Vyasadeva, after compiling Srimad Bhagavatam and revising it, taught it to his own son, Sri Shukadeva Goswami, who was already engaged in self-realization. So this is giving now chronology. He realized it, then he compiled it, and then he taught it. And who did he teach it to? He taught it to his own son. Text 48. So this is Jiva Goswami's commentary on his own verse, which reads, Srila Vyasadeva experienced that this final goal, that's prayojana, the bliss of pure love of God, is superior to even Brahmananda. What's that? The happiness derived from realizing the impersonal aspect of the Supreme. How do we know? We know this because Vyasadeva taught Shukadeva Goswami Srimad Bhagavatam. So he could taste the special bliss derived from love of Godhead, even though Shukadeva was already absorbed in Brahmananda. Śrūta Goswami states this in the verse beginning, Sa Samhitam. In this verse, the phrase kritvanu kramya, this is technical, so listen carefully, which means after compiling and revising, indicate that Vyasadeva first, this is chronology, he first wrote Srimad Bhagavatam in an abbreviated form, that's those four verses, and that later on, after being instructed by Sri Narada Muni, he expanded and rearranged it. This is kridvanukramya, after compiling and revising. Thus, two apparently contradictory statements are reconciled. Here's one. In this Srimad Bhagavatam, earlier, it says that the Bhagavatam is composed after Mahabharata, along with the other 17 Puranas. But that was just the synopsis form, the four verses. And then the other, the second, the contradictory one, found in Skanda Purana, that says that the Mahabharata was compiled after the 18 Puranas. You got the contradiction? No? There's a chronology. If you, before chapter 7 is chapter 6. Very logically. In chapter 6, actually it's in chapter 5, it describes the manifesting of Srimad Bhagavatam and manifesting of all the Vedas. So Vyasadeva looked into the future. He's able to see the future, and he saw Kali Yuga, and he understood this is going to be a very difficult time for the living entities, and so I will make it easier for them. I'll compile the Vedas in a written form, and I'll divide them. So he divided them into four and entrusted each of these sections to different persons who are his disciples. And then he compiled the Puranas and the Itihasas. In the Skanda Purana it says he compiled Mahabharata after the Puranas. So Mahabharata is in the category of Itihasa. But what does Itihasa mean? Never, you don't have any idea what Itihasa means. Itihasa is a particular type of history. Mahabharata is a history. And it's a particular type of history, like you've heard of Ramayana, the story of Lord Ramachandra's life. The style and the format and the rules governing its composition, Mahabharata and Ramayana are alike. So they're Itihasa. And the Puranas have different rules and standards and requirements. They're also histories, but they're different. Just different. You know, like say, poetry that rhymes and poetry that doesn't rhyme, for example. They're both poetry. But they're different categories. Some that rhymes and some that doesn't rhyme. Similarly, there's histories that have certain rules and others that don't have, follow the same rules. They have other rules. So it's just technical point, but according to one of the Puranas, Skanda Purana, it says the 18 Puranas were composed first, and then the Mahabharata was composed. Here in the Bhagavatam it says that the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is one of the Puranas, was composed after. So that's a contradiction. And the answer to the contradiction is, when the 18 Puranas were composed, what Vyasadeva did was, he just presented the essence, four verses, not the 18,000. Then he received instruction from Narada, he entered into his trance, and then he wrote the 18,000. And that's this kridvanukramya, after compiling and revising, anukramya. Kritva anukramya. He wrote it, and then he revised it. And in the verse, there's this word, nivritti, nirita. Nivritti. What does nivritti mean? Anyone can say? What does nivritti mean? Huh? Removal. Like anartha nivritti, right? Eradication. The path of nivritti is the path of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the gradual reduction of implication in matter. There's another kind, gradual increase of implication in matter, pravritti, where people do rituals, karmakanda rituals, so they get more stuff and better variety of stuff and prosper and enjoy stuff. That's the pravritti. Nivritti is the path of devotion, reducing material involvement, nivritti mark. It's explained in the first purport of the entire Srimad Bhagavatam. So the word nivritti nirata, or attached to renunciation, describing Shukadev, implies that because Shukadev was already Brahman realized, even before he came in contact with Srimad Bhagavatam, he was complete in his renunciation. And after hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, he didn't go back to sense gratification. He just went further in devotion, not back into sense gratification. Nivritti nirata. And here's a picture of Jaimini. I'm going to read to you something that's... Now, the book that I'm reading, this is the BBT version or translation of Tattva Sandarbha by Jiva Goswami, and it's Gopi Pranadana Prabhu's commentary. His commentary, as I mentioned, it's based on Sarva Sambadani, is the name of Jiva Goswami's commentary. He wrote the book, and then he wrote a commentary on his book, Sarva Sambadani. So from Sarva Sambadani, and then Baladev Vidyavasan's commentary on his commentary, we're going to hear some things. So that what Jiva Goswami wants to say in the verses becomes illumined. So here we go. I mentioned it's in First Canto, Chapter 4. So, in the first three chapters of Canto 3, the whole of the Bhagavatam is summarized. How is it summarized? The first chapter is there are 6 questions asked by the sages of Suta Goswami. And then the other 2, chapters 2 and 3, is the answers to those 6 questions. It's, they want a, like a synopsis of the entire Srimad Bhagavatam that Sutta heard from Shukadev. So after hearing that synopsis and hearing the final question was, now that Krishna has departed, where have religious principles taken shelter? That was the question. And nearly the last verse of chapter 3 is, religious principles have taken shelter in this Srimad Bhagavatam, which is as brilliant as the sun. You've heard that phrase. It's a very, very beautiful poetic verse. Cooling as the moon, as brilliant as the sun, appearing after the sun sets, that's Krishna's departure, this brilliant as the sun, Srimad Bhagavatam appears, which is none different than Krishna. Religious principles take shelter there. Take shelter of Srimad Bhagavatam. You're protected by religious principles. So the sages go, woo. Can you describe the appearance of Srimad Bhagavatam? And Sutta says, sure. That's chapter 4. So Vyas looked into the future, saw Kali Yuga, understood the difficulty, I've already mentioned this, and then he decided to do something which was make the Vedas more accessible. So I'm just going to read from Canto 1, Chapter 4, verses 21 and 22. After the Vedas were divided into 4 divisions, Paila Rishi became the professor of Rig Veda, Jaimini, who you see pictured here, the professor of Sama Veda, and Vaishampayana alone became glorified by the Yajur Veda. The sage Sumantu, who was very devotedly engaged and entrusted with the Atharva Veda. And Sutta's father, who is Sutta Goswami's father's name? Roma Harshana, was entrusted with the Puranas and historical records. That's the translation of those two verses from chapter 4. So he divided the Vedas and entrusted the Vedas into different disciples, and then they in turn had assistants, and their responsibility was to preserve and to further subdivide and to organize and, you know, nicely look after those four Vedas. So I'm just going to read the next paragraph. These rishis were all highly qualified. Some, like Jaimini, wrote philosophical sutras on their own. So to make commentary on the Samaveda, which he was entrusted with, he wrote some sutras to help encapsulate the message of the Samaveda. Vaishampayana, if you can recall, he was in charge of the Yajurveda. He's mentioned several times just in this Tattvasandarbha, by the way. So, Vaishampayana recited the entire Mahabharata in the court of King Janamejaya. Who is King Janamejaya? Huh? The son of Maharaj Prikshit. So after the Pandavas was Maharaj Prikshit. After Maharaj Prikshit was Janamejaya. So Vaishampayana recited the entire Mahabharata in the court of Janamejaya. Why? Because it's about his ancestors, his grandparents, great-grandparents, actually. Very glorious Pandavas, so he wanted to hear about them. Vaishampayana obliged him. Although Vaishampayana was in charge of the Atharva Veda, the Yajur Veda, he was certainly familiar with Mahabharata. However, Vyasadeva was concerned. This Srimad Bhagavatam is very special. So he didn't give it to these Jaimini or Vaishampayana, and you'll see some reason in terms of Jaimini, why not? He gave it to Shukadeva Goswami, not just because he was his son. Shukadeva is exceptionally qualified. Exceptionally qualified. That's presented in the Tattvasandarbha earlier section. It is said that once Vyasadeva was dictating various verses to Jaimini, when Vyasadeva came to one verse from the ninth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Jaimini hesitated to write it down. Here's the verse. Matra svasra duhitra va. You've heard Prabhupada quote that verse, haven't we? One should not allow oneself to sit on the same seat, even with one's own mother, sister, or daughter. For the senses are so strong that even though one is very advanced in knowledge, he may be attracted by sex. Jaimini didn't want to write it down. He apologized, but he couldn't agree with Vyasadeva, what he said. That a self-realized sage might become agitated by the mere physical presence of a woman? Srila Vyasadeva simply smiled, and by his mystic power, suddenly he turned himself into a young woman. Guess what happened? Jaimini went, woo, woo. Jaimini, attracted against his will, found himself trying to embrace the woman, who, just as suddenly, turned herself back into the not very attractive old sage. Vyasadeva could understand, you know, Jaimini's a nice devotee, but, you know, he can't properly represent this Srimad Bhagavatam. But, you know, the phrase, from the verse was nivritti. Niratam, already engaged in self-realization. He was, perfect. Even before he heard Srimad Bhagavatam, what to speak of after he heard Srimad Bhagavatam. Now I'll tell a little story, we have a little bit of time. In Tattva Sandarbha, there's Jiva Goswami deals with some of the prevalent philosophical the contemporary philosophers' conceptions. They're not so prevalent today, but they were at the time, where names of the scriptures were named after people, like Matsya Purana or Kurma Purana or something like that. These are names of the Supreme Lord. But, certain scholars say, well, that was written by modern people and then something happened and then modern people wrote that something. They say like that. And to reply, to counter that idea, said, no, they're actually eternal, as there's many, many scriptural references that say this. They originally come from the Supreme Lord, as the Vedas do, the supplementary portion, the Puranas. Although they're histories, they come from the Supreme Lord. So it's like history before it happens. Like Vyasa, it's like Valmiki. He wrote Ramayana in a whole yuga before Ram even appeared. And then Ram did what Ramayana said. How's that possible? Because the pastimes are eternal and he had the capacity to realize eternal pastimes. How is that possible? Because of his purity. They were revealed to him and then he wrote them down. And then they happened because they're eternal. Eternal means they're sometimes manifest, sometimes not manifest. So there's this, one of the four examples which he gives in his Sarva Sambhadani, is this description of the Taittiriya Upanishad. Some of you have heard Taittiriya Upanishad. It's one of the principal, very highly esteemed Upanishads. But it's given the name Taittiriya from an historical event. What's that? The historical event was Vaishampayana was entrusted with the Yajur Veda by Vyas. We just read the verse from Srimad Bhagavatam. And Vaishampayana, he had some people assisting him. And at the moment it's escaping me, the name of one of the persons who was assisting him, they were taking too long. One of his students, Vaishampayana's students, came and said, these other assistants of yours, they're incompetent. Just give the whole thing to me, I'll get it done very quickly. And Vaishampayana said, you're proud. And pride is not suitable for the student of the Vedas. So get out of here. You're dismissed. And before you go, leave behind all the Vedas, the Yajur Veda that you have received. So his student vomited all the Vedas that he received and he left. And the other students, who are the slow ones, or being accused of being slow, they were very eager to receive the Vedas. But humans don't eat, vomit. So they transformed themselves into partridges, which in Sanskrit is something close to taitras or something like that. And they ate the vomit. They ate up all the Yajur Veda. So that which they ate up became known as the Taittiriya Upanishad. Because it's a subsection of one of the Vedas.
don't tell that one in public.
Oh, I'm not telling it in public. Oh, I'm not. This isn't a Sunday feast. This is Monday night at the movies. Don't worry. I know that, how to not say those things before certain audiences. Don't worry. So that's some indication So what happened, do you recall that the student of his, Krishna, the student of Vaishampayana became upset because he felt that he was he had been dismissed in a fit of anger, and it was inappropriate. He wasn't deserving of that punishment. So that student, whose name I can't remember, he approached Surya Narayan and requested, because in the heavenly planets, the knowledge, the number of verses of the Mahabharata and the volumes of the Vedas are much larger, and so he received even more of the Yajurveda than Vaishampayana had received. He was a little proud, this fellow. Forget his name. And the followers of Vaishampayana, by the way, were given by a certain name. Again, my memory is poor. But they had undergone some particular prescribed austerities for eradicating for their teacher the sin of killing a brahmana. So what am I doing to describe all this? Jaimini and Vaishampayana, although they were in charge of the four Vedas, they weren't fit in Vyasadeva's estimation to be in charge of Srimad Bhagavatam. That's the reason for narrating all this. And even the other Puranas, what happened to Ramaharshan Sutta? He got kusagrassed by Balaram because he didn't respect the Supreme Personality of Godhead when the Supreme Personality of Godhead came before him. And he understood, you're not qualified to speak the Puranas. Finished. The glory of Shukadev Goswami is very important. There's more described in Tattva Sandarbha, and this is just touching on it in one of the verses of Vyasadeva's realization. Okay? And if you weren't confused, consider yourself fortunate. So now this is the last verse we're going to discuss. We chant together. Savai nivritti nirataha sarvatropeksha ko mukhatmuni kasyava ramatim etam atmarama samabhyasat. Translation. Sri Shonaka, ask Suta Goswami. Sri Shukadev Goswami was already on the path of self-realization, and thus he was pleased with his own self. So why did he take the trouble to undergo the study of such a vast literature? So the color coding helps you understand which words go with which translation words. Nivritti nirataha, similar to the previous message, was he was already on the path of self-realization. He was fully renounced. He was Brahman realized. He was already there. Why did he need to do something? Because he was already there. Why did he need to go study books, study teachings? He was already on the path of self-realization. Atmarama. He didn't need anything outside of himself, so why did he go outside of himself? And the following verses one of the most famous verses in the entire Srimad Bhagavatam, which we'll let Jai Jagannath discuss one day if he wants to. It's the verse, there's a whole chapter in Chaitanya Charitamrita where Lord Chaitanya instructs Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and later instructs Sanatana Goswami on the meaning of the Atmarama verse. Very wonderful verse. But I want to get the word for word. There we go. Sarvatra upekshaka. Sarvatra means in every respect, and upekshaka means indifferent. So he wasn't attracted to anything material. So why did he go study a book? Because generally people study a book because they want something. And generally they want something material. They study books to get something material. So he's already there. Why do you have to go study something? Why did he take that trouble? It wasn't trouble, it was ecstasy, because it was the verse then, Atmaramas Cha Munayo, the persons who are even in Shukadev Goswami's position, or anyone that's like a Mahabhagavata, great personality, they like Srimad Bhagavatam too. Why? Because it's transcendental, it's not material. They're not attracted. Nivritti nirataha. They're not interested in anything material, but they are interested in something spiritual. And Srimad Bhagavatam is that, fully spiritual literature. No tinge, which is exactly, goes circling back to why Vyasadeva is feeling despondent after compiling all the Vedas, because he had put all that material stuff, how to fulfill material desires, how to engage in fruitive activities in a religious way, so people can feel satisfied materially, but not sufficient emphasis upon this. So he compiled such a literature and he taught it to Shukadev Goswami, and Shukadev Goswami was eager. Very eager. Although he is already pleased in himself, so he didn't want something material, it was wanting this Krishna Katha. So even we're wanting something material, we should study Srimad Bhagavatam too, because it cleanses and brings us to that position. And if you're already self-realized, study Srimad Bhagavatam too. Like Shukadev Goswami. Because it's such a wonderful transcendental literature. It's for Paramahamsas and for the lowest victims of Kali Yuga and everybody in between. It's for everybody. Read Srimad Bhagavatam. Hijai. Any discussion or comments or anything? You have something?
There are many statements that have been popularized in ISKCON, such as, hang on to Srila Prabhupada's dhoti, he'll take you back. Or Prabhupada said in one letter, I think, if you distribute books until the end of your life, then Mahaprabhu will personally come and drag you back home, back to Godhead. And
there's distribute books.
Distribute books. And we learned these things when I was trained on book distribution and so on. Sure. There are many such statements like this from Srila Prabhupada. If you become only 50% Krishna conscious, then I'll take you back. So many statements. Here we're hearing the message of without preeti, preeti niryavam, namuchita, you're not going to be freed from material bodies. And similar messages. One does sadhana bhakti to manifest prema, and then after prema, one goes back to the spiritual world. So I guess, what's the reconciliation of these two sorts of realities? Do we really need to get prema? And if not, you know, if it's just as easy as hanging on the Prabhupada's dhoti, whatever that means.
Then, well, hang on. What does it mean? That's a good question. What does it mean? If he's going to that position, then hang on. Just come to the stage that he is by following him. That's my understanding of what hanging on to his dhoti means. It's not like, you know, a little baby and just continue being a little baby and holding on to your mother's sari. Or hang on to Prabhupada's dhoti. Literally, that's all you do is hang on to their dhoti or sari and you go where they go because you're holding on to their sari. It means following their instruction, you know, with pure love and devotion. That's my understanding of what that means.
So how seriously should we take, the question is obvious.
I'm very clear about
it. Yeah, but
I'm very clear about it. You know, the teaching says 10%.
Yeah.
And if one isn't 10%, one may take birth again and go the rest of the percent. There may be some special dispensation. There may be. There may not be. Generally, 10%. There may be some special dispensation. It's something like, here's another, you know, take the big picture of Prabhupada's teachings, and it's quite clear. The big picture is it possible that one can achieve perfection just by mercy? Is Kripa Shakti a real possibility? Yes. So, okay, it's a real possibility. Okay, I'll just wait for Kripa Shakti. Prabhupada said, no. It's like you may get an honorary degree from Oxford University, but generally, that's not what happens. Generally, you enroll in the university and take the exams and get accepted and then take the exams and pass the courses, and then you may get your degree. Yes, is it possible, exceptional cases, for an honorary degree? My God, Elton John got an honorary degree from Oxford University. So, you know, any beast could get an honorary degree. But that's not common. So what we need to do is hold on to the dhoti or get special mercy is to be able to follow properly and become 10% fixed in unalloyed love for Krishna and nothing else. Nothing else. That's holding on to the dhoti. Kripa Siddhi is possible. One may. Something else? Anyone? Or that's it. Anything over here? Okay, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Something over here? You have something? Mukunda?
Hare Krishna. Maharaj, a few days ago, Jai Jagannath Prabhu was reading to us from Vishvanatha Chakravarti Thakur's commentary on the 10th canto, and he was reading the pastime of Krishna being born, but it was in connection to a topic we were discussing, and it was talking about how it was comparing how Krishna enters the womb, after the first six babies have been killed.
Okay.
And the six babies represent the objects of the senses, and then Krishna represents bhav or prema. So then I think it was saying that a fear of material existence has to be brought about before that can be done. Was that right?
A fear of the six enemies.
A fear of material existence.
Yes.
Of the material world.
Yes.
Has to.
Yes.
Be there before we can get rid of the get rid of the objects.
Yeah.
I don't know. I didn't really want to ask this question necessarily, but I was just thinking about it, like how to get the fear. Because I don't feel like I have a healthy fear.
Well, there's by hearing, by observing, or by experiencing. Which one would you like? So it depends on how good your hearing is. And that also, part of it has to do with how well you have practiced before you hear, or the successive incremental improvement in the quality of hearing, but it also has to do with your eagerness for the object. And the two relate, the quality of one's hearing and the eagerness for the object. Now, Devahuti, for example, in Kardama Muni, they were pure. But still they underwent, you know, long period of purification before they had. So, and Vasudeva and Devaki, anyway, there's so many descriptions of what their prior qualification was. But then, you know, fear of material existence. It's not a mundane, it's a transcendental. It's, you know, I'll tell a little Prabhupada story. So one, a short answer is by associating with those that have that quality is how you get that quality. That's the purport of the story. You may have, probably have heard this before, but it's something that I enjoyed very much. In New York, Prabhupada was visiting, and it was in Prabhupada's schedule, in the afternoon between 4 and 6, he would receive guests, and if there weren't guests, then devotees would come and there was some darshan time. So one evening, or one afternoon, there was darshan time, and Prabhupada was having fun with the devotees in the room. And his fun was, he was asking, what's the difference between all of you and me? And they were having fun, saying, oh, Prabhupada, you're this, and you're that, and you're the other thing, and we're so fallen. And, you know, they were enjoying, and then Prabhupada, it was time for to go for arti, and Prabhupada said, the difference between you and me is you can fall down and I cannot. Jai, Prabhupada, let's go to arti. So they went to arti. And before arti, there was the greeting of the deities, and, no, excuse me, it was time to give class. So he went before the altar, paid obeisances, everyone paid obeisances, and with folded palms, he was saying some prayers. They went back to the Vyasasan, and he sang Jai Radha Madhava, gave class, and back to his room. And the person who was Prabhupada's servant at the time asked Prabhupada, when you were standing before the deities, I noticed you were reciting some prayers. May I ask, what were those prayers? You've heard this before. So Prabhupada said, I was reciting prayers to Krishna. May you please protect me from Maya and keep me always engaged in your service. And then the devotee said, but Prabhupada, you said the difference between you and us is we can fall down and you cannot. He said, now you know why. Because I'm always praying. So fear not in, like, you know, trembling kind of fear, but having a healthy respect of not getting close. It's something like this verse that says, although the Jaimini didn't like, that although one may be a very elevated soul, one doesn't flirt with Maya. You don't go and take risks and then become susceptible to Maya. And one doesn't take that precaution, doesn't have that healthy regard, you're vulnerable. Not you, any one of us are vulnerable. And so we should, and you know, then how to get to that? By hearing? By seeing in others? Or by directly experiencing? And then sometimes we still don't get it. You have something? Shri Kishore Kishori Ki Jai. 8:00. Last question.
We hear about Jaimini Rishi not being given the Bhagavatam because Vyasadeva helped him, see that the attraction to a woman is... you were narrating why he did not do it. And on the other hand, We are asked to hear Bhagavatam and distribute it to others, physically, or speak about it. We are encouraged. And of course, Jaimini Rishi is way up there, and I can speak for myself in a way down somewhere. Still, we are asked to speak, and others are inspired. We ourselves are inspired. But in Vyasadeva's mind, Jaimini Rishi was not the person to propagate Bhagavatam or be the person to preserve it. So what is it that we are doing, one, in our speaking Bhagavatam? What effectiveness can it carry? I'm sure it's an order by the disciplic succession.
That's
so
it. That's it. You touched on it. The order to do so.
So then the question, okay, that's...
So why didn't Vyas give the order to Jaimini?
Yeah.
Well, yes. You know, you see, he was proud. To Vyasadeva, he said, I don't want to write it down. I think you're wrong. And the difference, hopefully, with someone else, like yourself, or whoever else is like way down, as you said, you know, I'm going to be cautious. And somebody that's not cautious and is flirtatious. Anyway, Prabhupada was giving us a chance under the order. Giving us the chance. And some persons, you know, blew it. They did stupid things, even given the chance. And so they went down. I'm not vulnerable. I can take chances and... Or doesn't apply to me. Bhagavatam doesn't apply to me because I'm above it. There's a big difference. Big. I mean, it's small but big. We're not qualified to study the Vedas like Jaimini. We're qualified to speak Bhagavatam because Prabhupada is giving us a chance for purification. Anyway. So we, when we're in service under order, it's like when there's this, one of the, like, I don't know, vigorous topics about, taking the position of spiritual master is on my order. So where's the order? Some persons, whose name and category we won't mention, where is the order? And without the order, then taking that position is presumptuous. Etc., 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 etc. So, on when there's the order of the spiritual master, its empowerment is there. It's very heavy to receive an instruction to do something. That's the empowerment, or at least the opportunity, the potential within the instruction to do so. Everything needed. The one who has faith in the instructor and the instructions from the instructor, everything is there, even we're not qualified. It's the elevator method as opposed to the staircase method, which in the case of the Karmakanda rituals with Jaimini was in charge of is one of those. Okay. We're done. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.